listening to the epic fantasy novel Lion's Last Kill, and this is Chapter 16, The Last Hurdle to the Summit. I want to thank you for listening, and if you like epic fantasy, come on and visit some of my websites, www.stormthecastle.com, www.castlefiction.com, www.epic-fantasy.com, or www.thepennyquest.com. I get a lot of stuff going on there, and I've got an awful lot of hits about a couple of things in particular. Is my fantasy, How to Make a Fantasy Diorama. People are really enjoying that. I show you step-by-step with pictures how to make a diorama. And I also have a How to Make a Video Game tutorial, which people are really enjoying. It has a lot of resources and step-by-step on how you can make a video game. If you'd like to check out one of those tutorials and other tutorials I have, go to www.stormthecastle.com. Thanks again, and enjoy the novel. It's going to be coming out in print pretty soon. It's almost ready for the publisher, so watch for it. And this is Chapter 16 of Lion's Last Kill, The Last Hurdle to the Summit. Posh woke at some time he guessed was morning. The sky was white, but it was white at night, too. The other three men were eating their breakfast, and they had allowed Posh to sleep a little bit longer. He felt okay. He was tired and couldn't breathe normally, but he slept as reasonably well as could be expected, considering the altitude. He tried to utter a morning greeting in the whistling of the wind that beat against the tent to them, but it came out garbled. And reaching up, he realized his breath stone was in his mouth. He didn't remember putting it in. One of the other men must have put it in for him at some point. He pulled it out and sat up. Even this was an effort, and he felt like the air was as thick as molasses. There was an irony to this, because the air was actually extremely thin. It was just his body fighting to feed his muscles with poorly oxygenated blood. He broke open his meal and forced himself to eat. It was totally tasteless. It was like eating cardboard. The thin air affected his muscles, his sense of taste, and it probably affected his eyesight, too. What else did it affect? Did it affect his thinking? Of course it did. And he hoped it didn't give out, and he hoped that it didn't give out on him. He would hate to face the oracle thinking only cardboard thoughts. What if he couldn't pose his questions properly, and she just laughed at him, then sent him skittering down the mountain, his brain a mush of useless soup? Or worse, yeah. What if she told him he needed to know what he needed to know, and he didn't comprehend it? The four of them fully dressed in their warmest clothes and began the last and final climbing day. They didn't break the camp. They left the tent assembled and all of their food and much of the equipment right there. This last day should bring them up to the top, then right back down by nightfall. They only took their climbing gear, ropes, pitons, pickaxes, and a few other things. The sky was clear and a beautiful light blue. Bosch found himself constantly looking up at the face of the last part of the mountain. It looked over them all, and it felt like the weight of it was pressing directly on them. This last obstacle to the top was appropriately called the Dragon's Skull. This made perfect sense. Yesterday they crossed the Dragon's Spine, and that led them to the massive capstone like a skull sitting on top of the mountain. The four of them started the final climb without saying a word to each other. The whipping of the wind made it difficult to hear, and the breath stones they had in their mouths made it difficult to talk. Everything was arduous enough with even the stones to help them breathe, and the air was so thin that a man couldn't tolerate more than a few minutes in it without the help of the stones. Mazer was leading the climb, so he took the first position. He was followed by Varga, then it was Bosch, and as the assistant climb master, Briak was last. The first and last positions were the most difficult and the most important. Of the four, only Bosch and Varga had actually gone this far up the mountain. Mazer and Briak had made the climb to this point only once, but only Varga and Bosch had actually gone all the way up to see the oracle. The climb was only about 400 feet, but it was up some very difficult cliff faces, and their progress was slow, but as safe as they could make it. They couldn't ascend directly up. They had to slowly weave their way back and forth, following the shapes of the cliffs. Because it had been climbed before, they did have some good information on some of the major formations and the right ways to approach the scaling up. By early afternoon, they had come to the last obstacle. This was the crown of the mountain. They were standing in a narrow alcove, and above them lay the last 30 feet to the top. There was no path or way to climb with their feet. This section was sheer, and had just a slight incline to it. They had to climb this section with their arms. It was all upper body strength from this point on. One man would make the climb by hand, then set a rope which the rest would climb up. This task fell to the climb master, Mazer. They wrapped a rope around his waist and hammered a piton and ring into the rocks at their feet. They would let out the rope as he climbed. This way, if he fell, he would only fall so far. They could break his fall by slowing the rope. Mazer began the climb, and after letting out the first few feet of rope, they could hear Mazer setting his first piton. But after that, the howling of the wind blocked off all sound, and they didn't hear any more pitons. They just let out the rope slowly as he needed it. It went very slowly for them. They waited, and carefully let out the rope a foot at a time until Mazer pulled it slowly in slow rhythms. They then let out about 20 feet like this. It meant that he had reached the summit, and he was securing the rope to double pitons and rings at the top. Standing in the small alcove and focusing on the rope, the three of them tried to blot out the call of the oracle. It was like an incessant sing-song that gnawed at them. Although they couldn't really hear what you said, there were hints of things in the buzzing. It was far worse than the wind. The wind was something natural, and it could be understood. The song of the oracle was something that just couldn't be understood. If you found yourself concentrating on it, trying to understand it, it just got more vague. She was very potent here. They would go over this last cliff and be in her realm, and she would be at her strongest when they saw her. Another slow few minutes passed, and the second rope dropped within reach of the main rope. This was the safety rope. They felt Mazer jerk on the main rope 3 times. This was the signal that it was secure and ready to be climbed. Varga tied the safety rope around his waist, and grabbing the main rope, he flexed and started his hand-over-hand climb. He had been carrying a small pack, and he left this behind along with his pitons and ice tools. This was a climb that you made with just your biceps and your clothing. Because of the cold, it was easy to fatigue your muscles, and if the muscles in your hands or arms froze and lost the feeling, it would be very easy to lose your grip and fall to your death. The safety rope wasn't a guarantee of safety. With the whipping of the wind, and depending on your fall, if the safety man at the top took more than a second to halt your fall, the velocity of your body could snap the rope or pull him down with you. After a minute, the safety rope came back down and Bosch tied it around his waist. 3 pulls came on the main rope, and he began his ascent. The cliff face wasn't exactly straight up and down. It had a little bit of a tilt to it, which allowed him to rest some of his weight against it. Along the way, he found small footholds where he could get some upward push, and several times he had to stop because the whipping of the wind threatened to blow him away from the mountain. As he climbed, Varga and Mazer took up the slack in the safety. He made the top of the cliff and took a hand off the rope to grab hold. 2 hands grabbed his arm, and with the last pull on the rope and a tug from Varga, he was up over the top. They dropped the safety rope, and within minutes, Bryak was up, and the 4 of them moved away from the edge of the cliff. The top of the mountain was flat, but it felt like the birthplace of hurricanes. The wind whipped and swirled around them. It was so strong that none of them ventured to stand up straight for fear of it blowing them right off the mountain. When they moved, they crouched, and they had to move. Stopping for just a few minutes here meant death. The cold and the thin air could lull a person. It made your body tired, and it called for you to just lay down for a few minutes. And the thin air made your mind weak. It easily agreed with your body. Yes, just rest here for a little bit was a tempting thought. But if you did rest, you wouldn't get back up. The only thing that kept you alive up here was motion. You had to keep the blood coursing through your veins. You had to keep pushing towards your goal, which wasn't to get to the top of the mountain. It was to get 20 feet below the top of the mountain. The total surface on top was only about 100 feet across, and the wind and the cold here made it very difficult to see. They were above the cloud line, so there was no snow here, but there was moisture. And this had been in a perpetual frozen state. Everything was covered with ice and frost, making their footing unsecure. They crouched their way to the center of the mountaintop to a narrow staircase that led down into the mountain. They hurried as they could go, into the narrow stairway, and walked down far enough to be out of the effect of the wind. And although they didn't feel it anymore, it still screamed in their ears. They finally stood up straight and put their heads together, but no one spoke. They just looked at each other in the dim light and gave each other courage. They'd endured a lot to get here, but the real test was ahead of them. Dealing with nature was one thing, but dealing with something that went beyond the normal realm of nature was a totally different thing. For a few minutes, they slowly clapped their hands together and stomped their feet. It served two purposes. It helped their oxygen-poor blood to flow. This warmed them up a bit, but it was also an attempt to beat off the pitch of the Oracle. She wasn't far now. They could all feel a presence, like a weight on their backs. It was like a summoning, and she was in charge. She called all the shots. But by delaying the meeting, they were exerting some control. They were asserting their free will. They walked down several flights of steep stairs that pointed directly at the lair. When they got to the door, they all paused. Bosch remembered his last trip well, and he didn't doubt that Varga remembered it also. He felt a little sorry for Maisel and Briac, and he wished that he could tell them that the worst of it was just in the beginning. The first few moments were difficult to endure, but just like walking into a bright light from the darkness, you adjusted to it. You adjusted as well as you could to the Oracle. You didn't get comfortable, but just when you thought you couldn't take any more, it let up just enough so you found some strength from somewhere inside you, and you endured. And it continued until you could just stay for a little bit longer. Varga opened the door, and with arms covering their faces from the light, they stepped into her chamber. This is the end of chapter 16. Stay tuned to next week for chapter 17, where Bosch and his party meet the Oracle.